Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
What's good, internet? It's the 24th of September, and you are listening to Waypoint Radio, episode 429. I wrote 24th and then left the ST, so we're just going to roll with it.
Cool.
I am your host, Rob Zachney. I am joined by Patrick Klopek.
I thought you were just continuing the joke from, like, earlier this week's intro. It's like, I'm not going to give up the 21st of September joke. You can pry it from my cold, dead hands, Rob Zachney.
God damn.
But nothing was funnier than Patrick's reaction to Rob fucking that one up, though.
Oh, it's like my favorite. It's my favorite thing. Now that he has to do the intro every single time, it's just there's, you know, it could go in so many directions.
What will go wrong this week?
Yeah, he gets so because he gets so flustered when he does it. It's my favorite. One of my favorite things about him.
We're also joined by our producer Ricardo Contreras.
Hi. I don't know. 24th.
All right. The date's so nice they named it twice. And we're also joined by our friend Dia Lacina.
You're slowly tail bringing it back there. You're gonna get to Lacina at some point. I just know it.
If we just start saying it a bunch of different ways, it'll be as you know,
Lacina.
As we discussed on Monday, Lacina. It's like Lacina. You can break a word in your head if you want to.
See, the problem is I just start hearing it all the ways now, and I'll get there. I will get there. Lacina.
Lacina.
Sorry. Anyway.
Okay. Now this just feels around to me being back in prep school. So stop this.
But unfortunately, that will be my mnemonic to get that right. All right. So we got a stack of games in the A block, and then we're going to be getting into Lost Judgment in the B block. Dia, I know you've been playing a bunch of it, but that's not all you've been playing. We've all got a stack of games to get into. Dia, why don't you pick this one up though? It sounds like the other game you've been playing this week is inspired by some of our very own content here at Waypoint.
No, it wasn't inspired by your very own content.
Wow. God damn it.
Wow. So
I have not actually listened to you talk about Stalker yet, but yeah, no, I picked up Stalker, Shadow of Chernobyl.
Oh, so that's the marker you're putting down. What mods did you fire up with it?
So I went in. So this is really funny. I'm doing it for a Let's Play, and I'm bringing a friend along for each one of the episodes. So it's a little bit slower to roll out because scheduling. But so M of Abnormal Mapping went along. We had the first one, and we were like, no mods, just going to go straight in, like, you know, vanilla Stalker. We're like 5 minutes in. We get to the interaction cinematic, and it's just like, there are no subtitles? And we go through the menu, and we're like, there's got to be a button to turn on subtitles. There's no button to turn on subtitles. So now we've got one mod, and it is the subtitle mod.
Wow.
Which is great, because
that's how it starts.
Like 10 minutes after that, we realize we don't really need subtitles, because everything in the game just kind of brings up a dialogue menu, except for this one conversation with this one dude you've run into at the beginning. This didn't
have subs. Oh, the pawn broke?
Yeah. But like, he's the only one who doesn't like bring up a big dialogue. Well, and it's only for a certain dialogue where he doesn't bring up the big dialogue screen, where everything is just text. But yeah, so I've got the one mod, and that's it so far.
But
yeah, we'll see. By the end, we'll just keep like adding
in
mods.
Created a fork of the Zone Reclamation Project. It is now your like canonical Stalker.
It's a gorgeous game. Holy shit.
Isn't
like,
it?
I cranked it all the way up because, you know, obviously, like, you know, I have a modern computer, and that one game's from what, 2007, I think it was?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it was very weird starting the game and like it just being like, we're going to ease you into this. Like, 1280 by 724 medium settings. No anti-aliasing. I was just like, wow, this looks like dog shit. Is this, and then I was like, okay, now we got to crank this up. And then you turn the maximum, you click maximum settings on that. And it's, there's like, it's still like, no. It's 2007. Let's not get carried away. Let's do 2X anisotropically. And it's like, no. Let's crank this all the way up. Come on. But yeah, you crank all that shit up and just even just well, stock, it looks gorgeous.
Yeah, I think, and one of the real revelations of Clear Sky, which came out in real quick succession, was that, like, they were capable of doing a lot more. They were just holding back to stay on the prior generation of DirectX.
That's what, it really seems that way. So that makes sense.
Yeah, so like, the artistic, like, sensibility of that game was really fully formed from the start. And I think, like, the complete mod basically just tried to like reverse project what they did in Clear Sky back into the original game. At least that was part of the philosophy of Stalker Complete. But yeah, I have trouble putting my finger on why I find it so pretty. I'm curious what your take is so far. Cause like in some ways, like there's very few things I point to that like, that is a big vista in the way that like an Ubisoft game is like, please stand in the spot and look out at this thing and take in these views. But there is the sense of place and there is the sense of like wild beauty to everything, even if what you are looking at is in some ways just sort of every day for the setting of that game.
Well, it's a very, you know, it's a very impressionistic take on, you know, this anomalous zone. You know, it's dirty, it's, you know, wild, but there's also like, you know, everything is just like a kind of a haze cover that's like, you know, it is like a glamour shot of this, like, you know, kind of wild, you know, like European wilderness. And you can, if you like, you get that draw distance up and you can see just like all of the trees just dotting the landscape, but then you can also see the anomalies just kind of popping. It's got this very like there's like an emotional quality to what is happening on the screen at all times that like I'm finding hard to quantify, because it's like it feels much more alive than a lot of even like, you know, contemporary games that are having things buzzing around in the background. Things are buzzing around in the background here, but mostly you don't see that because like it's not drawing out that far, but like it's what is being drawn in. And then like there's the grass, and the grass can only, you know, we're not rendering every single individual blade of grass the way like, you know, Breath of the Wild wants to try and things like that. So you get this kind of like mid-ground where the depth of field just kind of falls apart, not because it's using depth of field the way modern video games use depth of field, but because that is what the renderer can support.
I also think, like, when you mentioned that you can see the anomalies and such, I think something that's so important is early on you start off so weak that the world feels bigger than it is because so much of it is dangerously inaccessible to you at first. Like there's a lot of things that you'll look out and you'll be like, I probably can't go over there. Like you see weird shit happening in the atmosphere. You see wild packs of animals that like probably just more than you can handle right now, or maybe a creature you don't really recognize at all. You just know it like that's big. And I am not, so it will have to wait. But I think a big part of that is just like, it is not a game where like from the jump, it's kind of, oh yeah, go anywhere, explore anywhere. It does a good job of gatekeeping you a little bit, but in ways that it's not like invisible walls. It's more that you were taught very early that like, you can go over here, sure, probably more trouble than it's worth. And so you tend to like, have a series of little forays rather than just like start going to the next objective.
There is a sequence, and I guess it has to be scripted, but like where you kind of, it gives you the tooltip for the anomalies.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just this boar that stumbles into an anomaly, and like you see it kind of get like thwomped, and like it's like, kind of like this, like when the anomalies do that big, like, you know, kind of ground pound effect. And it does that, and it does that, and then boom, it launches it into the fucking sky. And there's just like, you know, blood coming out of it. And then it's just like, that boar is gone. And it really, like, you know, and that's like 20, 30 yards outside of like the main, like, first town.
Yeah.
And it's just like, wow. And then you try to walk through it, and then boom, you're dead. You know, I walked a little, I kind of figured, I learned how to like dodge through the anomaly. So I just kind of sprinted over to the railroad overpass and ran into like six dudes who were just there with machine guns. And I was like, I'm going to take these fuckers out. No.
No.
I eventually did by save scumming my way through it. Like, I just like kill one guy, save, and finally made my way through that encounter after a half an hour of just throwing my body into it. Learning that, like,
those guys were friends.
Even like, just like the, like, you know, just a headshot from a handgun will kill you. Like, the headshot being so lethal, and then just even like, you know, you can only take like three hits before you're dead.
Yeah, I feel like that was a characteristic of particularly like shooters from Eastern Europe at that point, which is like both the way they feel and just like the rules for like how combat works. It feels like they all owe a bit more to like Counter-Strike or Rainbow Six than they do to like other like more run and gun type shooters. And so there's always like the core assumption of, of course you can't take an AK-47 round to the face. What? No.
There was a moment where I got the shotgun. I got a shotgun and I was just like, oh, fuck yeah, it's on now. And so I just started like, I kept like walking up to this dude, like sprinting, like, you know, hold on the sprint button and just kind of like rock up to him, run out of stamina and like, okay, drop out of sprinting. And then like I'd go to like fire at him and like it would just be like game over. And I'd be like, I didn't even get one shot off. So I'm like, let's try this again. So I like rush at him and like immediately hit the shotgun, do two blasts of the shotgun. And he's just like, realized I didn't make it far enough. And then as soon as you realize, it's just out of range, pop, you're gone.
Yep.
But I definitely did keep like trying to play like I was playing Doom.
Yeah. And eventually, I mean, like, honestly, I think the place I often get is I end up playing it more like The Hunter or something like that, where it just turns into a wilderness survival sim, where man is the most dangerous game. So I'm really curious to continue like hearing about your experiences in Stalker. Where can people check that out, by the way?
They can check it out, patreon.com/dlacina. It's a special LP for $5 patrons.
All right.
Is the, because I've thought about this when I've been looking up, just like the Steam pages for when we're talking through which Stalker game to play. And I think it must have been Shadow Chernobyl. And it was just like, quick save the game was like one of the reviews. And so that's maybe wonder about that aspect of the game heading into it. How much of that is like the lived experience of a bunch of players, like the history of those types of games, or if like that was your own, like what you expect from us when we go into this, is it also the kind of thing where, hey, you should be putting on a putting on a timer, hitting F6 or whatever its equivalent is when you're actually playing it, because it's just that dangerous if you're going to make any meaningful progress.
I think my view of this is there's places where like the difficulty curve doesn't really climb, like ascend or descend like gently or sensibly. And so that's just like, yeah, there's going to be places where you're like, you know, I think I see what they're going for here and I respect it, but I'm not going to run this again and again until I dance between the raindrops and do this thing. Like, I am going to save scum because otherwise it's not going to be fun. And I think that is, so I think there'll be places where you start reflexively doing it because you start to realize, like, well, the other thing is this, from my experience, part of it was also, there were parts of that game that did get under my skin in terms of just like panic reaction, where like quick save became like almost a, you know, crossing myself in some ways, where it's like, okay, that corner was cool. Okay, still hear something fucked up ahead. So quick save. All right, here I come. I don't think the game is like that all the way through. I think there's going to be places where, like some of these games do tend to unfold, you will continue gearing up and getting more and more capable. And I think there's a point where if you're playing carefully, you will outstrip really what the game can even throw at you. Like later in the game, at some point I got like the, you know, second highest tier armor, a bunch of like, you know, chemical and elemental resistances, and like this ridiculous Enfield rifle with a scope that was like the first really accurate gun I'd had in the game. And it was over for those guys at that point. I was just like, okay, we got a third of the game left, but I am now the most dangerous thing in the zone. So I'm going to walk over this. I think it's just funny that like multiple times in the early game, it throws you into situations that are so sink or swim that like you're trying to parse them out and control like your fear response. And I think it turns into a quick save simulator.
Well, this is because games have gotten so far away from that, even PC games, where like that was pretty intrinsic to PC games, even if it wasn't a game that required like a quick save and a quick load. I mean, obviously that was like pretty frequent with the shooters, but that was just kind of part of a lot of PC, and I put a lot of like PC games in the early 90s where you're just used to like, yeah, that's why I remember F6, F7, because like that's where my quick load and quick save was on the keyboard. But then having played Resident Evil recently, you know, and watching where like, oh, here's a game that, you know, intertwines the save functionality into its mechanics to generate tension. I don't know. It's just giving me a lot to think about when I wonder about the approach to playing that game when it's really just at the behest of the player, how frequently they want to tap that button to give them like a semblance of safety. And it also becomes, you know, when do you do a real save and when do you just do a quick save?
There's also a really interesting thing about Stalker is that, you know, at one point I picked up a machine gun. There were like four guys left and I just picked up like the, you know, like the AK, and I was just like, oh, it's over for these motherfuckers now. And I was like sitting there tapping through the numbers on my keyboard. And I'm like, where's the fucking machine gun? And like, as I'm trying to like, you know, toggling between like my bolts and like my pistol and my knife. And then I'm like, where the fuck is the machine gun? I realize, oh, it didn't like auto equip the way modern shooters would.
Oh.
Even shooters a couple years later, you know, you pick up the machine gun, boom, it's in your inventory. You know, it is.
That's equipped. Always on You're, five. That's yeah. just where the machine guns. The, yeah, so you, have so to, you have to assign it. You have to assign it to a you to, have to a number.
Well, you have like kind of small gun and then big gun slot, it seems like.
Oh, okay.
And so you have to go in your inventory and right click it and equip it and put it in the slot. And then it's like, okay, now you can use it. But like.
Gotcha.
You know, in the middle of a firefight, I was like, oh, okay, I just got to kill one of these guys and get their machine gun. And then it's over for them. And like, no, you can't do that because the inventory, of course, doesn't pause time. You have to open it up and you're like times, you know, the game is still going on. And then it's like the interface is like, you know, this very like Fallout 2, you know, early Diablo, like kind of drag and drop, you know,
with a grid,
Yeah. And it's just like, what the even shit am I looking at these? It's like so like, grotesquely beautiful. I love the shit out of it.
Yeah, I think, yeah, and I love that stuff too, because then you start getting real good at like diving for cover, quickly whipping that interface open and like respecking mid fight, and like going back to the battle. It's great stuff. And there's so much to look forward to. I think we're probably going to end up doing Shadow of Chernobyl, and probably I will probably suggest we do Zone Reclamation. Because that is just sort of the minimal tweaks thing. Maybe, Patrick, you have a good time with that and you'd like check out Call of Pripyat, which is like their attempt to be like, okay, now it'll be much less structured and we'll do more of a Far Cry but good type approach to Stalker.
I'm almost certain the hour or whatever I played years ago was like what most people recommend. It was like, oh, you, and this is, let's say, 8-9 years ago, but like it was, you know, play Shadow of Chernobyl with the complete mod. Like that was like the general consensus for a long time. And obviously that has shifted a bit as the complete mod kind of got a little more ambitious and away from
that's true. I think that person who wrote in though and mentioned that the complete mod does also tweak weapon values a little bit to make everything a little tighter. I think that's absolutely true. And like, I think Stalker is a game where really good firearms are so rare that like when you find like a really good condition firearm produced like post 1995 or something like that. You're like, holy shit, this is amazing. Because everything else is like, has the feeling of like some sort of, you know, sat in a leaky cargo container somewhere for like 10 years before being taken out of storage and used. So like, I think the game is supposed to have this feeling of, nothing really works. Like, your aim can be good, it doesn't matter, because the gun's going to do what it's going to do. And so you constantly have this feeling of, have the shot lined up, and like, one round out of five finds its mark. And you're like, well, that's what I'm working with here. And Complete, I think, does try to make it a little more like predictable in the way a lot of shooters were at the time, where like, you know, if you put cursor on target, you'll hit target. So yeah, we'll probably do zone reclamation, and then we might play around with some other stuff. I will probably also be greedily checking out some of these other mods that people have suggested. People telling us about some of the ridiculous ongoing efforts to make Clear Skies Faction War come to life. I'm really curious about. But yeah, I think we gotta go back to Shadow of Chernobyl, especially because ultimately its structure owes a lot to Roadside Picnic directly, so we will check that out. So Patrick, you've also been playing some things. It's kind of your nickel. Where do you want to begin?
It's probably worth like just briefly dropping in on the Guardians of the Galaxy game that you know was unveiled at E3. I think had a pretty mixed reaction. I think partially driven by a pretty understandable. Hey, this just looks in some ways like a tonal knockoff of the, you know, the MCU movie. Like, regardless of your feelings of that, it can seem a little weird to just see that like directly translated into video game form, and also lose the sort of like actors and likenesses along the way. And so I had a chance to play like an hour and a half of the game. The game's done. It comes out in a couple of weeks of unlike a lot of other games that have and will get delayed. At least this one seems like it'll probably hit its mark by the end of October. But I mean, the one thing I would touch on is just kind of worth noting, is I think the combat came across really poorly in that video, in which it just looked, for people who don't remember, like basically the kind of like the combat looked like in the video, which was, hey, there's four characters who have very distinct abilities. You play the boring one who just kind of has two crummy pistols and the ability to dash around with these boots. And then you tap buttons on the controller to watch the cool powers pop off on a cooldown from Groot and Rocket and Gamora. And that is not untrue. That is, you know, more or less like the combat dynamic when you actually get into Guardians. But the thing I would give it credit for that I found more interesting than the video sort of kind of directly alluded to when they unveiled the game was that what the game starts kind of like pulling apart is that, well, they're going to throw at you a bunch of different weapon or enemy types that specifically are only really going to be triggered or weakened, or that you're going to make any meaningful progress on by understanding how those dynamics work. And so, sure, Star-Lord kind of becomes this like slightly boring cipher for the rest of the characters' abilities, but it ends up making the game feel like fairly strategic moment to moment, in which you are using like Star-Lord to navigate around this battle environment while assigning out the different characters to do different things. And that becomes more interesting once you start getting sub-powers for each of the characters. So it's not just you're hitting, you know, ABXY to assign out one of the characters. It's like, oh, I'm playing up Gamora, and then specifically I want her to like do some sort of dash instead of something else. And I haven't seen how far that goes in terms of what the game is going to kind of like throw against the player, but it was more challenging than I expected in the bit that I played, which is hard to tell. Is it just challenging because they threw me 4 hours into the game and I didn't get to do a tutorial? That definitely happens with circumstances like this. But one of the things that I did like was there's a whole sort of like elemental structure to the enemies as well. So it's like one of the things that's unique to Star-Lord specifically is that he can switch between what's at least in the demo was like, it's like basically just ice bullets. And it's like, okay, well, there are certain enemies who are kind of blue coated, and you're going to need to soften them up before you can sort of, you know, attack them with the rest of the squad. And they're kind of doing things off on their own. And then there are combinations with sort of environmental things where like certain characters can only interact with certain parts of the environment. I actually just found it like far more engaging moment to moment. There's sort of kind of something, always something for me to do that was unrelated to controlling Star-Lord, where it seems to have made up for maybe what some of the potential deficiencies of that character and like what would be interesting or not interesting to do if you were just playing as them, or if they were to switch to a model where you were swapping between the characters and more like a, you know, X-Men, was it Alliance? What were those beat 'em ups called? I forget those three of those that they made. The Raven made two of them. They were very good.
Ultimate Alliance, I think. Right?
Ultimate Alliance, right? Well, is that the most recent one, or were those the original ones that they made? I can't remember.
I think it was just Ultimate Alliance 4 or something, right?
The one that was on Switch.
On Switch,
I think you're right. So anyway, yeah, that was kind of my all I could really take away from the hour and a half was that if you thought the combat looked boring, I don't think that's true. I don't know this necessarily means it's going to be amazing, but I think there's more to it that has been shown off in the past, and I think kind of speaks to how that combat might make a little more sense when you actually kind of get behind a controller. All the still kind of the issues remain where
3 was the one, 4 doesn't exist.
well, maybe it will exist in the middle of this call, Kato. Right. Not all of the Nintendo
that's true
Direct has been quote unquote spoiled for people. So I'm looking forward to see more of it. It still feels a little MCU knockoff-ish in a way that is a little weird. Nonetheless, little mechanic that I thought was funny is that I don't know if it happens when your party has been weakened. They do have their own health bars and you have your own health bar, or if it's just randomized. I couldn't get a hold on when it happens. But basically, there's kind of like a little puzzle where like the group huddles up and you need to give them a pep talk based on their mood and how they feel about the combat encounter. And then if you answer that correctly, you get like a temporary boost to like attack and health. And if you screw it up, nothing happens. It's just you don't. They're kind of bummed at you, and then they just go back to fighting. But it's the kind of thing that could be like a fun wrinkle, or like incredibly annoying if it ends up just being sort of a repetitive slog. But I don't know. I don't know. After having seen Deathloop, I don't know that I would have said have the Deus Ex team from Eidos Montreal make a beat 'em up. I don't know if I would have necessarily wanted Guardians of the Galaxy, cross Deus Ex, but they seem to be doing a better job than I would have expected, especially relative to Square also pulling the same thing with the Crystal Dynamics team and just saying, hey, stop making Tomb Raider games, go make a Avengers game. And they went, well, what if we're not good at it? This seems to be a little more competent, even if it's not necessarily in line with what that studio has been known for in the past.
I just don't know the point of Guardians of the Galaxy in a world where Ratchet and Clank, you know, came back and is good.
it's fair. There's like a lot, like if you like these like games that like give this similar sort of vibe, like kind of like action platformy, like goofy, like there's been a lot of though, like a lot to like this year. And like Ratchet and Clank is like a spectacular one of those, like it's I'm with you. Yeah, I it's one of those things where I think a lot of it is going to depend on how much do you want to play a knockoff feeling version of these characters that you saw on the screen. It's really hard to tell how much it's going to be supported by what's there on its own, and that's just like really hard to tell without knowing more of what they're going to do with like kind of the story. But as it stands, like at least I can say is the combat doesn't seem completely terrible, which is a low bar. But I don't know that I came
like
out of it.
If you can, like, kind of a huge relief for that game, because like
yeah,
there was enough decent stuff that they showed that like if you're on board with the Guardians, the thing that might have kept you back is like that looks like it could be shitty. If the core loop is not shitty, then there might be something there. But then that does advance it to the next thing of, is a different take on these characters interesting enough to keep me engaged for the length of the game? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. I mean, you do get to spend a lot more time with them. Like, there's whole sequences on the other part of the demo is like a whole sequence on the ship where you get to, you know, there's a bunch of, not quite dialogue trees, but, you know, you can learn more about these characters. But I, you know, it's hard to
do these
to,
guardians seem less twee and sentimental than the ones in the movies. Like,
no, it's the exact 100%.
It's a like Xerox gun version of the character.
Yes. And I think I'd be hard pressed to imagine how you would make a Guardians game without acknowledging how they became like enormously popular in pop culture as a result of those movies. But I think it falls victim to the fact that with Spider-Man or Wolverine, you know, like with other like popular comic characters, you have a little more license to put your own spin on it, even if it remains like fairly close to some core tenets, just because there isn't, I think if you were, I'm not saying they had to make them grimdark or whatever, but like if you were to go too far off of how these characters became popular enough that they wanted to make a multi-million dollar video game in the first place, I just think it's like a rock and a hard, I don't know that there was a good path out absent actually like getting those actors involved in the game, which of course like Marvel probably wouldn't allow because, you know, they control their storytelling pretty tightly.
Now my brain has gone to Deus Ex, Guardians of the Galaxy's Chris Pratt's head done J.C. Denton style.
Oh my god.
That's the Guardians of the Galaxy. Like, you know, give me OG Deus Ex, but a Guardians game. I'll play that.
I mean, sure. I mean, I, you know, again, it's like after having played Deathloop, it would have been nice, even if they had to make a Marvel game because that's where the money was. I kind of wish you could, after having played Deathloop, can't help but wonder, couldn't there have been a different IP that could have been given to Eidos Montreal that like allowed them to do some first person something or other and then just take advantage? Like, all right, fine, just cash in on the cultural popularity, but like go try and do something interesting with it. And I just find it a complete bummer that Square has tasked two of their teams with, like, I don't know, don't do the thing you're good at. Like, go figure out how to do something else.
Yeah,
and
it's weird.
That sucks. I think that's a bummer. Go build new teams to do that stuff who have specialties in that. I mean, this one might turn out better than the Avengers, but I still think it's not a great way to run a studio. Is to say you staffed up for 10 years to build this type of thing. Go do something else that uses very little of that skill set.
Well, I mean, but that's the nature of the large publisher system, right? Is like ultimately they desperately wish all their developer resources were fungible and could just smoothly be moved onto any project. It might as well, you know, it's a widget, right? And it just will make whatever seems most marketable and fashionable at the moment. But yeah, there are competencies that you can work toward or against. But that's the reality. The funny thing is, I think you totally make a sweet Marvel Deus Ex thing, right? Like, you think about, like,
sure.
Oh, yeah.
By the end of Deus Ex, particularly like the original one, J.C. Denton is a superhero. Like, you walk through those levels like a living god. There's nothing to stop you from just leaning, like starting the game there, right? And seeing like, let's see what crazy powers we can put in. But then you know, it can be tricky making a stealth immersive sim and having that cool like vibe of like the wacky gang is always with you.
Right. I don't know necessarily how you accomplish that. Maybe Guardians wouldn't be the character or premise to do it, but I don't know. It just seems like there was maybe another path, and this may turn out like to be like quote unquote just fine, but you know, it's just too bad. I think there were other ways they could have gone about this with this team that, you know, I don't know, ended up with something a little more interesting given their roots.
Another thing I want to talk about is Sable just came out, and Cam reviewed it on the site, liked it quite a bit, painted a very compelling picture of it. But I am curious, Kato, I know you've been digging into it a little bit and you're a few hours in. How are you finding it? And how are you responding to the fact that, like, the way Cam lays it out, this is a game that's kind of about, like, go out in the world and find your place in it.
Yeah.
And, like, kind of dust its hands off from there and you're off.
I'm really, really enjoying it. And part of it is that, remember how I was talking about Eastward and how it wouldn't like kind of just let me play it? this game really gets out of your way pretty quickly. Like, there is dialogue, obviously, but, like, especially after you finish the tutorial, but even within the tutorial, it feels like, you know, it's well paced in that regard, so that's very helpful. But ultimately, I think I'm really digging the game. For people who don't know, it's essentially a 3D exploration game, platformery exploration game. There's no combat. You're doing and interacting with the world mostly through jumping around and interacting with objects in the world. And you begin the game as Sable, and it's the day before your gliding ceremony, the beginning of your gliding, which they don't explicitly explain, but you end up learning is the moment in your clan's coming of age ceremony, where you set out onto the world alone. Essentially what happens is the clans are nomadic and they move around, so you're left behind at one point to find your way in the world and decide what you want to do. The art is amazing. You know, they like super heavily referencing Mobius, the illustrator. And it just, I played it uncapped on the frames. They default to 30, which is weird. But what they did is they have that sort of animated on the twos situation that Into the Spider-Verse has. But that only really applies to the characters. So if you uncap the frame rate, the characters are still on that kind of jerky motion, but the world isn't, which actually looks really cool. Like, I really
I like that. On the Xbox, the demo came out.
Yeah.
And people were like, hey, I've got a Series X. Why does this seems like this game could run at 60? And it sounds like they had, like, for design reasons, had thought like, oh, 30 would make more sense with what they're doing, and the contrast between kind of 30 in the world and a you know, alternative like kind of animation and the characters. But they flipped that off, and so now it's default. There's like not even an option to switch it to 30 on the Xbox, which is what I'm playing it on. It's just at 60. But I'm with you. I actually find like the split between that to be really cool, and frankly amplifies like that difference that they were going for. Like it looks all the more stark when like you're running a Sable, you know, across, you know, the desert, and you know what could look like in lesser hands. Lesser animators to be like something jerky that's missing things. Instead, it just strikes you as different, especially for
an artistic
like your central
choice.
Character in the world. Yes,
for sure.
Yes.
And I'm really enjoying it so far. I'm still very early, but like the big thing that I love about it is the way that it signals what it's about, right? Like, obviously it's like very like openly just saying, hey, well, this is a coming of age story. You're going to go on this, you know, quest to find yourself. But the ways that it kind of like signals that is that in different ways of like both explicit and like implicit, where explicitly you're being told to go figure out what you want to do with your life in some ways. There's like these different.
Not save the world. It's
no.
Like the game doesn't open. Like, this is clearly an environment in which there's like lots of like deserted, I don't know, spaceships and other artifacts. Like, there's a rich history here, but if the game doesn't open with, you know, like
it's a post-apocalypse. People are surviving in this world, which actually obviously has technology that is still like working from some other time, but it's not like the survival is the main thrust of like any conflict here. Like, they seem to be doing fine. This is just how they live, and it's totally chill. They go around collecting scraps from these giant machines that sometimes you can even start there's like a little bit where you learn that one of these things was flown recently. You hear some people like on a recent recording in one of the spaceships like fixing it and then immediately crashing it again, which is a great bit.
That's really good.
Yeah, and it's just the big thing here that I really love is that one of the things that one of the earlier things and the only real like important things you can use the currency in this game for is to buy clothes and different parts for your motorbike, which is a really fun way of like being like try things on, see what fits. It's like the whole point of this thing, the whole point of trying to figure out who you are can be talked about in so many different ways. Not just what you want to do, but how you want to look like, how you want to feel, what you want to the things around you to like look like, all like feeds into that creation of an identity. And I really love that. Like, it's like, no, there's not like, you're not buying upgrades. You don't need, there's no health. You don't need like to buy potions or whatever. Like, what you're buying is different ways to express yourself through your clothing and through the way that your hover bike looks. And aside from that, the other things that you're doing are going on quests for different types of people. Like, there's cartographers that are obviously like mag makers. There's machinists who can hear like the voices of machines that talk to them. And like, you basically kind of just do their jobs for a bit to see how you enjoy it. And the more you do them, they give you these badges that you can then make a mask out of. And it'll be the each kind of like profession has its own specific mask. So it's about it's kind of about externalizing, building and externalizing this new identity for yourself and having the space to do that at whatever pace you want, which is kind of a really beautiful like coming of age like ceremony of just like, you got time, fuck around. There's no clocks or limits or anything to you running around and exploring this completely open world. And I'm really, really digging that.
Does it, what the thing that I get stuck on when I've heard this described, though, is and it sounds beautiful. It sounds like a beautiful effect they're going for. But it also seems like one of the things they're trying to get at is this notion that mastery is not the right word, because really it's like the joy of apprenticeship in some ways, right? Like of learning the rudiments of like a craft. But the thing is, of course, like a bit like the weird thing is so often in life, like these things are deeply procedural, right? And it's the growth of like approaching things where everything is a new step and everything almost like hurts your brain as you try to like remember the steps and then like do what like the master crafts people make look effortless and make your own body like perform the gestures, right? And like get to use the tools correctly. And the thing that like, it sounds like a great thing for a game to try to get at, but like part of this is the game's trying to give you the sense of you going out in the world and connecting with these trades, connecting with this work, and through that, knowing yourself a bit better. And like in a movie, the way that would unfold is the character would end up in a new place with new people, build relationships there. There'd probably be a montage or something, but there'd be an actor there doing the work to show, and there'd be a soundtrack supporting it where like you see the growth of these skills. The part that I'm curious about is like, can Sable, like how well can it produce that feeling of, yes, my character has taken these early steps of apprenticeship, and that badge at the end does mean something to me in that sense of I too, alongside this character, have taken these steps. Because so often, like in a game, things are necessarily simplified.
Well, and then I guess, and then that, like, it, along those same lines, given the game, at least for what I can understand, and kind of, you know, further in, like, given the fact that whatever the game's source of conflict is like an internal conflict of the character figuring out what they would like their future to be, as opposed to, I need to collect the doodads in order to fight the big threat, you know. So then to Rob's point, is like, okay, if you're going to remove what most video games, even games that look like this and play like this do, which is have you fighting things, working towards some greater threat, so that along the way, the player is like learning things and then is applying it towards something at the end, a culmination of their time with the game and the skills they've accrued. That is kind of create a high wire act for the game when it takes all those things away and says, we're just chill, we're just here to learn. What do you experience during those acts of quote unquote learning? What is it adding up to? And so at the end of the game, when you choose, I think the game sets up, like you'll choose a mask at the end, and then, and the mask will be like kind of like where, you know, what you're going to do, you know, sort of with your future. I don't know if that's actually where the game ends up with its conclusion, but you know, what will that feel like? And will it feel earned and satisfying? Would you've removed all sorts of other ways that, you know, games over the years have decided, oh, this is how we extract or provide satisfaction for players when they spend 10, 15, 20 hours in this place.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I'm not quite far enough to like really get a sense of that yet. Right. But I do think, speaking to the point of like the way that it's kind of stripped out, I think Cam might have mentioned this in the tweet. I didn't actually read the piece yet, or maybe I just saw someone else mention this about the way that Breath of the Wild.
Cam's just putting their own pieces up on the website.
the way that it like one of the easiest kind of comparisons to make here is the sense of exploration that you got out of Breath of the Wild without all like, but you strip out all the combat from it, right? And you're just left with that sort of exploration being the kind of main joy of the game. And I feel like, I'm trying to remember if this was a Miyamoto quote, but at a certain point there was, I believe it was Miyamoto, or maybe it was Aonuma, somebody who had worked on Zelda comparing, maybe this is even the wrong game to attribute it to, but I'm trying to remember where this quote came from, something about trying to capture the idea of, or like the sense of being a kid and like hunting for like little animals in your backyard, like catching lizards and bugs and shit. Like that sense of just like, there's no point to it. Like you probably let the thing go unless you're an asshole at the end. Like it's just
it's
like
weird. You just exactly.
It's fun to find things. No, I mean, like that sense of like exploration for the sake of exploration.
Right.
But then like you had the added stakes here of that exploration also needing to lead to some sort of personal creation of identity. Right. Like, I feel like, to me, it felt like I'm getting that sense of that, like, okay, like, what is interesting here? Like, what am I as Sable? Like, what am I going to build towards? Does it ultimately matter? Maybe I'll just explore this wasteland and be fine doing none of it, right? I feel like that's going to be something that, you know, the game will answer as I get further in, but at least the setup feels very much like I'm enjoying the way that exploration has been made, like integral to the ability to create an identity for this character. You know, like they've done a really good job of just, hey, fucking go up there, see what happens. I like finished a quest early on accident, before I got it from the person who was gonna give it to me, because the object was there and I thought it looked interesting and I went and interacted with it and I figured out a whole little puzzle thing. And then I got to the place and like, it was already done, which is great. Like the ability to just do it however you want, like truly leave it open to full exploration is really great.
Yeah, I do. I so admire the fact that, and Cam does get to this in his review where like, there's points with that gamble where it's like, hey, go out there and like figure this all out. Like go and see the world. There's points where it does backfire a little bit. Like there's points where you're like, okay, I could really use a signpost here. Like, but come on,
General direction. Yeah, doesn't have to arrow in the sky.
Soaked it in. I am now ready for a tour guide. But it's not a really small fraction of the game. Pardon?
Yeah, so what if you just sail across the fucking map and try to get to the edge of it by going straight for like 10 minutes and seeing what you bump into, you know? Like, I feel like that's the thing that the game wants you to do, and I've fallen into it.
From the vantage of Cam playing a bunch of it, like, there's a point where you're like, I have now gone in a, picked a direction and gone many times, and it's starting to get a little bit, but I admire the risk, right? Where like, this is not a problem to be solved, probably, because it is endemic to the core pleasure they're trying to evoke of, like, what is out there? The game's not going to tell you. The world isn't going to say, like, go to the question mark on your map. You're just going to have to trust that, like, it's a big world out there and there's stuff out there for you. And with that comes, like, at some point, probably, people will be like, I'm a little bored.
Sure.
But
I do love specifically
you change your major and you take electives in that major instead.
Right.
And then you finally get the call from your dad who's like, look, who do you think's paying for a college?
Right.
Stop changing majors and taking electives. Buckle down, take those gen eds and fucking graduate and get a job.
Well, this is like Cam did say it was weird that the game ends with you becoming a finance worker. But you know, I think it's an interesting direction, and honestly, a hopeful one for the post-apocalyptic world of Sable. nature is healing; bankers are coming back.
Jesus, I don't know if I forgot where this was coming in the conversation, but a thing I wanted to point out too, speaking to that thing that I just said, where like I did a thing and finished it before the quest got. And in some other games, you might get like a little pop up after you finish the thing, even if you had done it quote unquote out of sequence or whatever. But I really love that the interaction of like it will give you arrows if you've talked to someone and they've told you where a thing is, right? Like the only reason you know anything is through communication with other people. There's no like, oh, hey, like this was a quest or like there was something important here outside of the way the environment tells you. There's, you know, a lot of the time when you're out in the world, there is barely very little to no UI, which I also really enjoy.
We'll take a quick break here. Patrick, can we hold on Kena until next sure. show? All right. We'll take a quick great break here, and we will start getting into Lost Judgment. In the meantime, you can play Sable right now. It's been pretty well received. You can check out Cam's review on our site. And I'd love to circle back this conversation once y'all put a little more time into it and see how your journey of self-discovery is unfolding and whether you still want to be out there discovering yourself.
Talking about Sable, talking about my life, Rob. We're getting
that After Dark already came out. Yeah,
it's the work of a lifetime, and so is working through our podcast backlog. Anyway, here's a quick break.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You know, it's fitting that we were talking about going out in the world and discovering oneself and, you know, making that transition from childhood to adulthood. Because if there was one thing that I felt was lacking from Judgment, it was the fact that there wasn't enough high school drama in it. And I am thrilled to report that Lost Judgment just recontextualizes the private eye like crime show into a high school and makes the Yagami Detective Agency integral both in unraveling scandals in the world of high school, but also being a friend and mentor to the teens. Dia, you've played Lost Judgment. What do you make of the shift in direction?
Mentorship?
What?
What's your beef with mentorship?
I think it's, look, I like if kids want to become private eyes, then Yagami's the guy for sure. But I don't know. I think it's a little bit, it's a bit of a strange conceit for the game. And I'm curious how it did land with you, as you played through Lost Judgment. And, I mean, there's kind of two things. Like, did you like how this follows up on Judgment, but also, do you like the new setting and the new like issues that the game is trying to tackle?
Okay. I think it follows up well on Judgment to a degree. I'm sick of the combat. My review for Pace, like I basically was just like, this is Judgment. Please take out the fucking brawling because it's boring as shit. And I know I am like, I'm not alone, but I definitely like that position is not the majority, it would seem. And I just want everyone to know you're all wrong for liking it because it's boring. And so that kept getting in my way of really just like enjoying the mystery and like hanging out at the school and guiding these kids through their problems. I think the character of Yagami is great for this kind of transition. Like, he is kind of the, like, this nerd that is going to end up hanging out at schools and being like, you know, hey kids, let me teach you about being a detective.
Yagami is always forever spinning a chair around and sitting on it backwards.
Like, he sits on the chair backwards. That is, he is 100%. No, actually, he's not. He's just sitting on the desk like a cool teacher.
Oh, yeah. Got that leather jacket. Cool
teach. I need him to change his clothes once in a while.
Just all the characters, just give them a second outfit, please. Just one, it's not just one the disguise. More.
Especially like Saori with the rumpled white Henley and then the cardigan that she just like, every time I see her, I'm like, honey, I know you're supposed to just like, you're just like bookish, but like, you just look dirty at this point.
Yes. Yes. She looks like the banker boxes behind her. Especially because we had the glow up in Judgment where it's like, surely you liked just having a nice fitting set of clothes, right? Like, it was cool having your hair up a little bit, right?
You got to do the taking her out in this one already, right, Rob? Have you gotten there yet?
No, I haven't taken her out.
You get to play dress up with her.
It was a fun version of the game right up until I left the makeup room lighting in Judgment and took her out in the game world. I was like, oh, I fucked up. Sorry, honey, we got to go back. We got to. I went a direction with a blush and it was wrong. I'm sorry.
I did that with her, her lipstick on this one. And I was just like, whoops. So we're still hammering out. It's the Final Fantasy 14 issue where you look incredible in the character creator. And then every now and then you get those cutscenes where you look like a PlayStation 2 era ghoul.
Yeah.
And it's just like, what happened? Like, what part of the, like, of the you know, the engine broke down and created this monstrosity that I'm looking at now? I like Lost Judgment. I think the changes are interesting. I like the fact that Yokohama is getting to like kind of become this new prominent city in the Yakuza, you know, ludic universe. I'm definitely glad, like, you know, it seems to be stepping in direction, like, in more progressive directions where I have to be like less concerned about, are you going to have a bunch of heavily armed Black American men running through the town that just want to like, you know, pick fights and blast, you know, like pop off with their guns every 5 seconds. Which was a big problem for me with like a dragon, and Yokohama. Yeah.
I'm really getting the meat of like sort of the central case here. And I think there's a few things. One is I find the theme of bullying a little bit less compelling than the sort of the way they get into. So the thing is, like, in Judgment, I kind of enjoyed the fact that you start off dealing with a pretty unremarkable like gangland killing.
Yeah.
And it turns into a thing that is tied to this, like, this drug that is connected to a major and growing, social strain, which is sort of an aging population and a lot of people being pressed into, caretaker relationships, for members of their family. Here, like, because of the way it opens with the after-school special case, everything begins to feel a little bit leaden. Like, everything now is about, like, and now we have a very serious conversation about bullying and your responsibility to stand up and say something when you see it. And I think it makes it a little bit leaden. not to say it's particularly poorly handled. Like, I think I, you know, there's a scene fairly early on where this teacher who has been sort of stonewalling you for a while, Miss Sawa, she like kind of comes clean about the fact that she did know a number of years ago that there's some horrific bullying going on, and she let herself be sort of intimidated and just sort of swept aside by older senior management types into not speaking up, not sharing her concerns, not sharing them forcefully enough. And that scene's actually really well handled because, like, it's convincingly rendered in the way that, like, one small cover-up begets another, right? The fact that, like, the people who brush off the initial complaints then feel the need to justify their decision to brush those complaints off when more serious shit emerges. And it continues to snowball from there. And more people are sort of rendered complicit in it. But at the same time, like, it's kind of one scene after another like that in this game. And to an extent, I don't know, the game is also very eager to give, like, nice, good people a bit of a pass. Like, Sawa's story was affecting. I felt bad for her, but also I'm sitting there and I'm like, I'm sorry, you should have known you didn't have to do that.
Well, you know? Yeah, that's yeah, I was kind of like, I was like, maybe you should have just anyway. Maybe.
Yeah, I'd like, I'm sorry, like, no, nuke them at court. Are you kidding? just go up there and testify. Fuck them.
Yeah. No, they're, there's, it's, these games are always very weird in, because, I mean, one, you know, you have the main narrative, and the main narrative, like, for, like, you know, it we do need to, we do have, like, the build and stuff like that. And, you know, eventually it kind of, you know, we have to spin out of control. We have to get, like, big and wide scope and, like, you know, and then, like, you know, kind of drill into what's, you know, at the fabric of society. And I don't know that these games are necessarily great at that. But I think they're really good at those moments. The Sawa on the roof of the school is a great moment. And it is bolstered by how well they do facial animations, especially facial animations. Like, the animation team across the board is brilliant in this, but they are so good at, and have only gotten better now that they've introduced so much a degree of subtlety in the quality of animations, whereas Yakuza is kind of these much larger, you know, impactful momentary vision, you know, facial expressions. But here, you know, Yagami will have an eye twitch. That's just like, that's the only thing that's happened. Just his eye will twitch a little bit. And you're just like, aha, yeah, I got what's going on. That's, and it's really good. But it also feels like every episode, you know, because like every chapter wants to be its own episode.
Yeah.
And like, it tries to, like, one, it has to keep reinforcing it, you know, the last episode over and over and over again. So one, if you play this even within a month, it gets kind of tiring.
Yeah.
Cramming it into a week, I kind of did have to, like, divorce myself when I was thinking about it. Like, okay, a normal human being would not cram, like, you know, 40 hours of Judgment into one week. But I think by doing that, coupled with the just not being deft enough to draw these plots out, but also and cover these topics, because I think like, you know, they're raising interesting points. I just don't think they necessarily know how to do it.
Well,
effectively.
On top of that, I think part of it is some of what fits together poorly here is that Yagami actually, so they do something really smart, which is that they give him a teen detective mentee who fucking owns.
Yeah.
Like, the girl who is the head of the detective club and effectively the only member except for her brother who she bullied into joining so it can be a club. Like, just terrific. The fact that, like, she's a really sharp young investigator and also just a total lit nerd. Like, totally, it's all after my own heart. But the weird thing is, there are times where it feels like, because Yagami is the character you're almost always playing in these games, there's places where, like, the thing that makes way more sense for the type of ensemble show that they're turning this into is to break from Yagami's perspective, right? Like, ultimately, some of the investigation of the world of children here would probably be better and more convincingly rendered through the eyes of, like, one of these kids. And the game's not going to do that. And instead, it's going to be like, Yagami, go embrace these teen hooligans. Now, some of that stuff, like, really works. Like, I also like where some of the shittiest bullies you meet early in the game, after you, like, thoroughly and decisively wreck their shit and, like break their confidence a little bit. The fact that, like, when Yagami covers up for them to keep them out of trouble, but he's like, and now we're gonna be best friends now, aren't we? And the menace in that, and the way they are totally, like, at that point, cowed by him, is really well done. But there's also times where I feel like the story is like, this is a world, this is a story that, like, they want to be writing about stuff happening in the world of children, and our primary lens on it is a 36-year-old private eye.
Yeah, it is, and, like, they do, I do, like you mentioned, like, the last time we talked about Judgment on the Cod, they do, and, you know, they try to make, you know, allowances for both how that works and then the ways it creates friction, you know, like, Yagami getting busted with the spy cams and him, like, being like, well, like, maybe, you know, I can't put the camera in the bathroom of, like, you know, the school's bathroom, but, well, we need to be able to see where bullying happens. And so, like, you know, at least it just acknowledges the friction there, but it doesn't work. And, like, there are moments where you do duck, you pull out of Yagami.
Yeah.
You know,
and I found those always are cool.
And those are cool. And, like, you know, previous games, like, you know, you did, you know, bounce between, like, you know, and, like, Yakuza Zero, like, makes a big use of, like, bouncing between, you know, Majima and Kiryu. And, like, I would have loved a version of this game where the detective school stuff, because there's also a lot of, like, after school special. I don't know how much you've done of the school missions, but there's the whole after school special sequence with, like, basically the dance club and the other clubs and things like that. And that would have been great just playing as the kids in that place. Like, you don't need Yagami for that. Yagami adds a kind of a quirky, you know, oh, isn't this funny, you know, teen, you know, after school TV show kind of vibe to it. But I think the game wants to be more grounded. And so the game could actually ground itself better by just not doing that. And it would be more emotionally effective if it did that.
Especially because I think thematically so much of this game is about, and I think this is pretty on the money, like, kids, even well-loved kids who have supportive families who are involved in their kids' lives, children still inhabit a world of their own. And you get a really limited perspective into that world as an adult. And adults who surround a kid all get different small little keyhole views of what's happening in that little, like, world within the world. And that is both one of the things that's really scary about being an adult, being a parent, is that you do realize that, like, there is a point where I knew everything that was happening in this little creature's life, and suddenly you kind of don't. There's huge parts of it that are basically, like, in the fog of war, and you just have to trust that, like, if something is serious that's going on that I need to get involved in, I will somehow know and divine that. And the horror is, you know, well, what if you don't? Like, what if you miss it? What if they don't, like, what if your kid doesn't tell you? And the flip side of that is, a kid, it's scary because you can feel that exactly, that isolated, that, like, you go out of the world of the home and the family where you're cared for and where you're confident and everything, and you enter a world that is really hostile to you. And it can feel, like, profoundly alienating. And so that experience of, like, this notion that, like, even kids with, like, everything going for them, still, once they're out there in this world of children, it can be terrifying on both sides of the age divide. That's what makes this story kind of compelling. But it would be better illustrated in this game if like you inhabited that world of children as a child.
No, like one of the things that I was thinking about, like kind of now, like going back and like, you know, cleaning up some of the side stuff that I just didn't get around to before review. There is a world where we get a franchise like this that doesn't stick to just being through the eyes of 30-year-olds. And I think those are much more interesting games at this point. You know, like one of the things like that I said in my review is that this is Judgment still is trying to be a Yakuza game and not its own thing, despite the fact that it's adding it is like kind of working against itself, because it, at one time it is creating this pastiche world arcade and like, you know, where everything is modal and everything is like gamified and like there's all these different aspects to it that are just kind of unique. But then at the same time, it's still at the end of the day, you know, you're a 35-year-old dude who does martial arts and gets involved in like these crime conspiracies. And like there's a better world out there, a bigger, more expansive, interesting world that's still, you know, we can do these grounded crime stories. And with these really with like the writing is good.
Yes.
Like the writing in these games is good as hell. And I just want it to do more than just 35-year-old crime story.
Well, and I should be clear, like, the thing is, the fact that it's, like, its point of view is, like, 30 and up, I actually, it makes it really resonant for me in a lot of ways. Because I think in a lot, like, so many games are, your protagonist is typically somebody just on the cusp or just on the far side of adulthood, where, like, still very young, still very green, right? And it felt like it took forever to get to a point where characters were just like adults, but not necessarily grizzled elders, but were just like people that I could see myself in. But the weird thing is, for the second outing in Judgment, I'm like, okay, but you're telling a story about kids. And so there's a point where it does become weird that the central POV is a 35-year-old. And that didn't cause dissonance in the first game, because ultimately that game is about the dreads that you start to experience as you near 40, as 50 is coming into view and your parents are aging and you're like, how's all this going to go? That's what Judgment centers on, and it all makes sense. But here it flips to the end of childhood, the beginning of adulthood, and you're still looking at it through this lens. But that said, like, I'm enjoying it. I am curious, like the thing that's not coming into view for me, and so, you know, you can give me the broad strokes of it, perhaps. Right now, it's like there's clearly a conspiracy to like carry out a revenge killing around a bullying incident some years in the past, but it also feels like this thing is poised to spiral into some massive, like, citywide murder on the Orient Express type situation, where, like, you know, now the local Chinese gangs are weighing in against me and are, like, on the take to try to shut down this investigation. I'm curious, does it convincingly get to the scale of, like, in Judgment, there was a good reason why the entire world, Yakuza and NPD, turn against you, and it's because you are getting in the way of enormously powerful government and criminal and corporate forces. The same thing seems to be happening here in Lost Judgment, but I'm like, it's about kids and like one angry dad.
It's mixed. It's not great, but it doesn't completely fail at it. This game was a deliberate attempt to kind of scale back and be more focused and grounded. And I think to some degree that works, but also there's the kind of like but we have to invoke, you know, the greater society. And in order to do that, we have to make a bigger kind of threat to things. It does become a kind of a, not quite murder on the Orient Express, but like it gets there, but like involving like, you know, a tug of war for the control of the, you know, Kamurocho and Yokohama's underground becomes a big factor in this.
Is Like a Dragon where I learn why the Tojo clan has imploded? Yeah. Or does that happen at the end of the Yakuza series?
Still a little bit of both. From what I remember, it shows up at the end of the Yakuza series, and then it's in like a dragon a little bit.
Well, too. This is one of the other reasons the brawling's got to fucking go. Is because, like, on the one hand, they're like, I kind of dig the vibe it's putting down of like, you now live in a transitional period. Like, the Yakuza is broken, right? Like, this is all like, all that gangland shit, all that's in the past, all the old orders, all the old rules are crumbling. But frankly, so is the society that they were the underbelly of. And I dig that. But at the same time, then it's like, okay, so now what's different is in some parts of town, you got Chinese gangs roving around in groups of four. Other parts of town, it's ex-Yakuza guys roving around in groups of four. And then over here, it's Korean guys like rolling around in groups of four. But it's all different. Trust me. It's the reason you're grabbing signboards off the pavement and beating the shit out of people. The context has completely changed. And I'm like, it just doesn't make any kind of sense now that I'm navigating this world where there's so many different like random pods of dudes who are.
Well, now you got the prep school kids that hang around in groups of four. The bar flies that hang around in groups of four.
Yeah.
It's funny because I thought that, you know, making Yakuza explicitly Dragon's Quest makes sense. I think like that is the right direction for the Yakuza franchise, because ultimately that game always wanted to be Dragon's Quest anyway. Like, let's be real here. You know, there's so many just RPG elements of that game. Just be explicit about it. And you get to summon lobsters. Fuck yeah. The lobster summon still fucking rules. But like, I don't know that I want another game with it. Like, I don't want Yagami as a, you know, a turn-based Dragon's Quest style combat protagonist game either. I want something different. I don't know what it is. I think
it wasn't skateboarding. I will tell you that,
dude. The skateboarding sucks.
Oh my god, the skateboarding. He's so slow. Controls like shit, and he can't go anywhere.
And he keeps the instant you like let back on the thumbstick just a little bit, he fucking stops. Like, he kept stop skateboarding for me, and I'm like, dude, you're in the middle of the road. Why are you doing? And I realized I was just like rocking my thumb back just a little bit.
Yep. Yeah.
The skateboarding is terrible. And
that's the thing. Like, honestly, this is the game where like they put the cab app on the phone and I'm like, yep. I am calling a cab. Like, the instant that appeared, I'm like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm not even gonna. It is cheap and I'm not going to do this anymore. I refuse.
And even if it wasn't cheap, it feels like they just keep handing you money so fast and hard that like, there's no reason to worry about it. Like, I'm just like, I don't care that it costs money. This is just an instant fast travel button.
Congratulations, Yagami. You found the basketball club. Here's 50,000 yen. And I'm like, cool, I'll take it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I kind of just like want the combat sequences to just go away. I don't think that we need them. Like, the quests give you enough money. The quests give you enough points to upgrade your stuff. If they really want battles, the quick time events, like, I never had a really a big problem with quick time events. I know everyone hated QTEs for a while. I thought the Yakuza games have always done a good job with them. Judgment has been a tremendous job with them. They always feel pretty natural. I love the chase ones. The chase ones are great. But like, there's like a couple instances in the combats here where you get the big cinematic cutscene combat, and then it kind of breaks down into cinematic with quick time events. And like, those feel good and fine. And then I get to see like the Yakuza animation team make a kick-ass kung fu movie for me.
Yeah, like one of the first fights, you get ambushed by the gang with the white masks at a nice little restaurant. And there's a great shot of the person you're supposed to meet back to the window while you are fending off an army with so the umbrella good. From one of the outdoor seats. But two, it's just like, wow, Yagami can move so fast, and there's so much comedy in his fighting style in these cutscenes. And then it's like, all right, now you get to be Yagami, and all that fun stuff is going to end because you're back to the mashing.
And it's really funny because, like, so eventually, like, I was just kind of like, you know, was like, I need to get through this game. I'm sick of this. I need these combat sequences to end faster. I'm going to put this on like simple and just not have to worry about random encounters ever again. Well, first of all, for some reason, the random encounters still take fucking forever when you do that. But like, also what it really does is it does like kind of a half-assed version of Nier's auto battle.
Yeah.
Where it doesn't look as good. It's not as interesting, but basically it just kind of uses combos for you. Just like as you can just keep smashing triangle and it's just like, we'll do combos for you. Don't worry about it. And like, that's when you realize it's like, oh, like this is not, even when I'm doing like the cool finishing moves, these aren't as cool. Like just give me a quick time event and make it look cool as hell.
Well, especially because like the little cases are fun and affecting frequently. Like there's enough content there. Like the brawling was there to leaven what could sometimes otherwise be a thin story. But I think the defining quality of Judgment is like the things bursting at the seam with subplots and stories, and they're uneven, but there's still enough there where like you'll have plenty of fun. The brawling is adding nothing at this point. Plus there's enough big punch ups that like, I still get the dramatic kung fu movie showdowns. Like I'm fine with that.
Well, you know, the game that I always kind of compare the Yakuza games with and Judgment with is Shenmue.
Yeah.
Shenmue does not have constant roving battles in it. It doesn't need to, because you don't actually need to constantly be doing battle in order for your game to justify its existence. And I don't think that the Yakuza franchises have quite figured out that they don't need that combat to justify themselves.
No, as soon as they realize that more Saori interrogation sequences will be their ticket to the promised land, then the better off we'll be. Like, give her a nice business suit and let her just go to work on making people uncomfortable and staring them down until they blurt things that are incriminating. It's all I want. So that's a lot of Judgment. I think it's, you know, I'm having fun. I think the game could be a little bit less hot for Teacher, but it's like I'm admiring what it's done. But I do think, and weirdly, in light of the fact that they're having those issues around like retaining their lead, it does feel like a game that's also more than ready to sort of transition into, yeah, this is an ensemble about this entire like set of people surrounding the Agami Agency and Genda Law Office, etc. Like so many of the characters could, if they couldn't carry a game, the collection of them and their interplay absolutely could. So I'm having a lot of fun with it. And it sounds like, despite your reservations, like you still admire what the series is going for.
Oh, I mean, like, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I gave Judgment a 9.5 because I thought it was a masterful look at how a city operates and how a person can be a part of a city. And also it had like a bang-in mystery plot.
Yeah.
This one, it's got the mystery plot. It stumbles a little bit here and there. It's not quite what I would expect, but I think it has it where it counts. And the city is still marvelous. Like, I still love walking around, you know, Kamurocho. I've been walking around Kamurocho for like 15 fucking years. Still love it.
I also admire the most convincingly grimy HVAC systems I have ever seen.
Dude, they're good. The HVACs and the windows.
Just incredible.
Yeah.
The discolored plastic with years of fingerprints patinated on it is just just stunning stuff. Really, it's right up there really with the Deathloop sandwiches. So props to the people who are doing HVAC installs in Lost Judgment. With that, shall we take it to some quick emails before we call it? That's rhetorical. The answer is we're going to take it to some quick emails.
Do it, Rob. You need to open up an email. I believe in you.
All right. So let me go open up my good questions folder. Did you make it in there? Who knows?
I don't think you've ever revealed
we're applying morality to systems of morality to the emails now.
No, good questions. Not
I want to know
questions.
What's in the bad questions. I don't give a shit what's in the good questions, Rob.
There's tons of good questions, but there's also a lot of questions that I'm like, this seems like it will be fun to answer. And there's some where it's like, I think that's fun for one of us to answer. And since it's not me, I don't care.
Wow, we learned a lot right now.
Well, yes. Okay, so Waz sent in a fun question because I'm genuinely curious to hear y'all's answers. What software do you install first on a fresh machine? As in the software that until it is on your computer, the computer does not feel set up.
Hmm.
A clean install of Windows, but like, what are you going to be taking care of before bedtime to make sure it is up and running and working on your build?
God, I hate to say it. It's fucking Chrome. That sucks.
That's pretty grim.
Yeah, it's fucking grim.
But I feel like that's almost, you can skip that one.
Like, that's the thing. It's like, okay, what's the first software you install, and like, what feels, when do you feel complete?
Right. Because frequently, if you want to get to the software that's going to make you feel complete, you might need a browser to begin with. And I guess, in this case, you know, you could be using Edge because it's installed. So you could skip that step. But I feel like Chrome doesn't count. I feel like the spirit of the question is more in line with like, maybe not what the first thing you do is, but the thing that like you have to have for this to feel like this computer is mine. And I don't know. It's been a long time since I've configured a new computer. I've just had the same PC for like 10 years.
Also, before I had this PC, I was on Macs, and you could very easily transfer shit from like a backup. So.
Right, it's the same with phones are my new computer, and I just load it up, it downloads it from
there. It is
the
it's
cloud,
like the same phone, even though it's a different machine. Yeah,
because it was actually kind of. I remember I used to enjoy the ritual of getting a new phone, and it's like it didn't replace all that stuff, and you had to like manually download it. And it was like a really cleansing opportunity to think about like what are the things that are most important that I need to access during the day, and it turns out like it's not these six apps anymore. Yeah. I don't actually need that shit, and like it's very easy to not go through that process unless you're forced to. And so I kind of miss that too. I'm sure the usefulness of just the phone just working is like probably outweighs that, but I do miss that kind of cleansing process of like the home screen of the phone, because I feel like what this question is describing. Like, is happening far more on people's phones than it is on a computer these days. Like, this feeling of, like, what is the thing that makes me feel like I need to be able to access? Like, I think that day-to-day moment, minute-to-minute moment, is happening on phones and tablets more than it is on your laptop or, like, your desktop computer.
Actually, I have a real answer. It's VLC. Because that way...
yeah.
Like, yeah. You know, night one, I just get in there and I get VLC on it. Okay, and I can just kind of... That way... The next time I come back to really get into making the computer my own and like finalizing the build and everything like that, that way I've got access to just like MP3s or movies while I'm doing other shit. And like VLC is just like, it's there. I'm like, okay, cool. I can load up media now in a way that is comfortable to get me through the last little bits of polishing a system.
Kato, I'm curious, like, you have VLC, what's your, like, this ain't home until I'm set up?
It's the thing, is I haven't had enough PCs to have this happen than once, but I need that little fucker fucking saying shit in the corner of my screen, fuck off. It might be horrible, but it's probably Steam and like whatever game I'm currently playing, if I've been playing something.
And Steam is the only one that I need to install right away. Like all the other services can probably wait a day or two, but like Steam's got to go on there only so I can stream to like the new machine from like the main rig or something. I think... Reaper is probably the thing that has to immediately go on a machine just in case, like, you know, we end up having to record off of it. Like, I never want to be in a position of like, well, shit, I didn't install the audio software. I'm an idiot. So like that always goes on there. But so much is putting in the logins now to your browser and like having, I guess that's the other thing, 1Password. Like going through the ritual of like, you know, okay, unlock the secret master vault key and like slowly breaking into my own 1Password account, because it always feels like I am, like I've locked myself out of my apartment and I'm going into the window when I'm activating 1Password on a new machine, where it's like, how does this keep happening? Where the fuck did I
put, well, yeah, where is that master key? Where did I put that? I know, do I log into the website? Did I print it out? I've done both. That's probably, that's a pretty decent answer. Cause like that's that, like then begrudgingly installing Authy, so that I can get, you know, by my strong two factors and be annoyed about it, but no, it's the right thing to do.
Yeah. So that's where I tend to come down. Oh, Dia, since you're here, you're at your battle station, right?
Yeah.
And you've been known to game. You got Steam?
I got Steam.
Can you tell us what your top five games are in terms of time played?
Oh, God. How do I even find that?
So you go to your profile. So okay. You click your username and Steam, you know, on the last tab on the top row.
Okay.
It should, if it doesn't, go to all games, just under your name, and then sort by playtime. Which will be to the right a little bit. All right. So, okay, hold on. So the way this game works is, so you've got your top five, you can throw out, you know, if you've got like an EVGA precision or like a tool that has to run maybe, necessarily, but, give us your top five. Don't give us the names, but just start from 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, up to the game with the most hours. Give us the hour counts. And then you got to give us a second to try and guess a few of them.
Okay. Let's see. Oh, wow, this is actually pretty recent stuff. Okay. Skyrim, Dragon's Dogma, BattleTech.
Need hour counts. We need hour.
Spoiled. Hold on. All right. Dragon's Dogma, Skyrim.
I'm just staring at this and being like, what the hell is even going on with my hour counts? I'm just losing my mind.
So your top five games, just okay. Read down what the hour counts
just
are.
Read the hour counts. Okay. Mm-hmm. 164, 161, 136, 132, 90.
That's funny. So, okay, so you don't, what's interesting about that is because you don't have frequently what we, well, you know, the small data set, but like the three of us, you have like a big, you have a big leap where it's like, oh, like a forever game. Like a game that you've put hundreds and hundreds, or in the case of Kato and Dota, thousands of hours into.
Almost.
All right, don't act offended.
Well, so one of the things is like I didn't have a gaming PC until 2020.
Right.
Damn. Yeah. Yeah.
I was consoles, and you're honestly even like consoles. I kind of jumped onto the, like, I left the world of games, in like 2007 and like didn't come back till like 2014.
That's where
then
all
I came back
my,
on then I came back right. on the Vita.
That's where Morrowind all my is super hours are.
If Skyrim's at the top, Morrowind's in there somewhere, right?
Yeah.
All right. Yep.
So that's
number four?
So we have four
I
then,
feel
right?
Like, I feel like it has to be, right?
Morrowind is four.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Something from the Fallout series, isn't there?
No.
I feel it's like, go look up Dia's YouTube channel. I won't do it. Won't do it.
Is there a strategy game in there?
Yes.
Oh.
That's what we're missing, right?
I mean, it has to be,
no.
Right? What?
Mm-hmm. No.
A Paradox game? No, but you don't know, then it isn't, probably.
Ah, it is.
Uh-huh. Oh, it is. Oh. Okay. But it took you a moment to answer, so maybe it's not one of the ones I would think of. City Skylines?
No.
Shit. All right, what is it?
BattleTech.
Mm, oh, yeah.
That was going to be my guess, but I didn't want to be like, Rob, that's just you projecting.
Wait,
no,
so what?
Of course.
What have we got? Did we have all five now? Did I miss one?
Oh.
Right, we got Skyrim, Morrowind, BattleTech.
Dragon's Dogma.
Dragon's Dogma.
Oh.
Was on
and
there.
Morrowind. Yeah, all right.
Wait.
So we got
did
five.
You say Morrowind twice?
Yeah, you said Morrowind twice.
Yeah.
So there is still one we haven't said yet?
Yeah.
Okay. Wait, where is it then? If five was BattleTech.
No, it's not. Five isn't BattleTech.
Oh, sorry.
BattleTech was three?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
What was number two again?
Dragon's Dogma.
Dragon's Dogma. Dragon's okay, Dogma. So...
I just was kind of sitting here amazed that I put that many hours into fucking Skyrim and not even realizing it.
Yeah.
That's how Skyrim goes.
All right. Wait, hold on. Is it a Souls game?
Yes.
Oh.
Okay, so...
I mean, two?
Is it just
two?
No.
Shit, okay.
One?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. All right, we solved it. We did it.
with the help of some spoilers.
Yeah. I feel like we might
Although
have
we would have gotten Dragon's Dogma pretty easily.
I would hope so.
Yeah.
I think it's funny because if I hadn't said Skyrim, the Skyrim list. Would be...
Yes, like, that would absolutely... The Skyrim would have been the thing to trip us up, I think.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think I am impressed by the fact that, like, you put your time where your mouth is. You know what I mean? Where, like, your list is like, yeah, those are the games that you talk about a lot and play. Whereas my list is like, oh, Rob, you were deluded about who you are as a gamer. Here's your actual time played list. And I'm like, but that's not me. And it's like, yes, it is.
But also, obviously, you can't take into account console stuff. And
oh, yeah, for sure.
But
yeah, I love getting to the bottom of the top fives.
I mean, if you look at my console games, like it's gonna be Dragon's Dogma.
Yeah, right.
I think we will. So we're coming up on. Oh shit! Okay, we're coming up an hour 40. I think for once we'll just call it. We don't need to hit 2 hours.
Wow.
We can just call it a day. We don't need to.
I can pick up my kids on time. Look, what a delight.
Wow.
We're out here crushing it. And you can see us crush it at waypoint.vice.com. You can follow us on Twitter at Waypoint. You can follow me on Twitter at Rob Zachney. You can follow Waypoint on Facebook and YouTube at Waypoint Vice. Patrick, where can people find you?
At Patrick Klubik.
Kato.
At @A_Kato_appears.
And Dia, where should people keep an eye out for your content?
At Dia Lucina on Twitter.
And here's that Patreon one more time.
Oh, it's patreon.com/Dia Lucina.
Watch Dia play more Stalker. Stalktober has burst the confines of Waypoint. Everyone is now sharing in the collective celebration of Stalktober. Although none of us is going to end up playing the same Stalker, because that is the miracle of that series. Our theme music is by Bowen. The track is Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. Learn more at waypoint.zone/BOEN. That will do it for this week. We'll be back next week with more Waypoint Radio. Except for me, I will be communing with the forests of New England. I think Patrick will be discussing Life is Strange with guests next week. And of course, Waypoint Plus listeners will be able to hear our long-awaited discussion of The Keep. Film
People
Twitter
be
is a buzz.
Standing up on the tables going, talk about The Keep. Talk about The Keep. Finally.
We heard you. We launched Waypoint Plus so that we could finally bring you the Keep content y'all have been craving, and we are delivering it. You can learn about Waypoint Plus at waypointplus.com. Actually, don't just learn about it. Go there, give us money so you can hear that Keep content. We do other things too, but for the moment, we're doing The Keep as part of our manhunting series. You can also, of course, listen to a Waypoint After Dark we recorded with Austin. And we have some other plans coming up. We're going to be talking about Stalker a lot in the next month, probably on that Waypoint Plus feed. So there's a lot coming. There's a lot there already. All of it's worth checking out, I hope. Once again, that's waypointplus.com. Until next week, fuck capitalism. Go home.